It's the Lean Into Artcast, the show where a couple of visual storytellers get together and take a walk around a difficult, sometimes slimy, sometimes bristly topic. And how do you do that in an hour and some minutes and come out unscathed or come out changed but unharmed? How about that? Well, we have a system. We have a routine. We have a plan and a premise. And usually I hand it over to my co-host, Rob Stenzinger, who uses a colorful metaphor to guide us through that system. Rob, what do you got this time?
Well, Jersey Drozd, thanks for that that setup. And yeah, it's been an interesting situation getting thrown this curveball. What strikes me is that you mentioned it being sticky and gross. So it's a lot like this is a store that doesn't exist, but you know, you've seen like the Teddy Bear Factory, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
I would imagine if it were like the Gloopy Monster Factory version of that, because you go in, this is unfamiliar, this is uncomfortable. Maybe I got to look around. I don't know if I want to spend my money here. You know, like if we're thinking about this is the topic that we're coming to visit, you're like, eh. But then you look around, you're like, no, I can see how this is laid out, and I see that. Well, I can choose my tentacles over here and the whatever kind of slime over there, and we kind of map things out initially in the first part of the podcast, and then we sort of dive into details and we assemble that monster and ask it a few questions when it comes out the other side sentient.
Wow, that's a whole new way of looking at it. So in other words, we assess the situation, look at all the parts that are available to us before we decide on what configuration of monster we want to create.
Yeah, and before that, we actually have a weird conversation in front of the store, which is the curveball.
Yes.
That's how we warm up.
Before we go in, we have a mental warm up to help us with this decision making process and these assessments. So, curveball time. Okay, I'm going to throw this curveball at you, Rob, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
Okay, good. And it's going to operate under the premise. And I think this is an easy, obvious premise, but I always feel like it needs to be stated anyway. Because there's always going to be that person who says, I just make for the sake of it. Okay, sure, if that's your position. But most of us make things in order to engage with other people and interact with other people, right?
I think so, yeah. We put our ideas into the world to see how they resonate.
Okay.
In some way.
And in other words, we want people to interact with us too, right? Mm-hmm. And in making a thing, the question arises, what audience do you want to reach? And how do you want them to interact with you? And a good way to get at that, I think, a good way to start approaching that question is to ask yourself, well, what do you respond to? What makes you engage with other people? So, Rob, I'm going to ask you, this is the curveball. Can you describe the qualities of the event that inspires you to engage with a complete stranger? What happens that makes you say, I need to tell this person that I was inspired, moved, entertained, delighted, horrified, my thoughts were provoked? What is the event? What is the quality of that event or that person that makes you interact with them?
Well, I think you actually, as you pose the question, you describe some of the qualities, but what I think is interesting, so you know, if I have some sort of reaction, so I this happens on a fairly frequent basis. I'll visit my, you know, whatever social streams of information, right? So Twitter or Tumblr or something, and let's see, or Instagram actually. And I'll see something that excites me or inspires me or whatnot. And that's kind of common. It's just pleasant. It's like, oh, okay, this is like a little place to rest my brain and get, you know, fresh fun or ideas or whatever, right? Feel like I'm in touch, something. But there's something that happens that's beyond that in touch thing where, that's nothing I've really tried to put a precise, you know, understanding to before. Because yeah, something is inspiring to me, I might just go, oh, this is awesome, woo, and then just move on. But that's not, but in not do it publicly. Just, you know, I don't have to publicly woo every time.
Right, right. Yeah, that's the weird thing. Like, it can be a very passive experience, right? You go like that. Yeah. It's like watching TV. That was great. I feel good about what just happened. And then you move on with your life. Oh, there's a bag of Cheetos. Time to move on to something else, right? But every once in a while, you go, no, I am moved to say something as a result of this, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we want as makers. That's what we want as people who make things, right? We want people to do that to the stuff that we make.
I think in somehow it's... maybe that's really the quality of being moved. And so when I'm actually moved and I do something beyond, so the mild form of public woo is the like button or the favorite this tweet kind of thing, right? That's like that's the nod. That's the knowing, you know, Mr. Miyagi nod, you know.
Yeah.
But
oh man, I wish I could have that every day. I wish I could have that Mr. Miyagi nod whenever I do something that I think is pretty good. I need to have a looped video of that or like a GIF. Somebody make a GIF or whatever it's called of him nodding.
That has to have been memeified, right?
Now I want to look while you talk.
So, okay. I think what happens, the quality that I don't think I'm even being that intentional about at the time is that I want to be a part of the thing. It's so beyond the just a mild acknowledgement that I want to be a part of it somehow and feel more connected to it. So then that's more of a share. Oh my God.
This is what we're talking about, everybody who's watching the video. We want this moment all the time.
Yes. Yes, that's the moment. That's it. Dang it, maybe that's the movement thing. Anyway, so it's you know, being moved, and I think I want to be a part of it, and that's where I will somehow reach out or reshare. Oh yeah, well for instance, Krishna Sadasivam, friend of the podcast and instructor, Lean Into Art and all that, he posted recently that he celebrated 15 years of making PC Weenies.
PCweenies.com.
And it's like when I have like this, that really got me excited thinking about that scope of achievement, and I just blurted those thoughts out onto the webs.
Do you remember when Dean Tripp released that "You'll Be Safe Here" piece? A few months back, that giant illustration of, oh gosh, I guess I should look that up while I talk about it. You'll be safe here, Dean Tripp. All right. But it was this giant piece with all these superheroes. And the premise was, is that, you know, Batman's taking a kid into a place where he'll be safe with all these superheroes. Like, superheroes are characters who protect children. And I was so moved by it, by this act of like not only craftsmanship, but sincerity. And I reblogged it and just said, Dean Tripp is like a magical concoction of sincerity and cool. And I meant it. It's just, it wasn't even like something where I hoped he would see it or anything like that. I've interacted with the guy, but we didn't talk that much. But that flew under his radar, and then he reblogged or like Instagrammed it or something and said, like, this is the nicest thing anybody said about me like in a while or something like that. And then next thing I know, you know, we're talking and he's on the Comics Are Great show. But that engagement occurred because I was moved to act. And what was I moved by? But I was moved by like good work, sincerity, and I guess good work and sincerity. Those are like two things in my coat of arms that I really, really respond positively to. So, yeah. I don't know if we got to anywhere with that, Rob.
I don't know. That's interesting. I mean, we could totally probably pick at that further, but interesting. So, yeah, that's a cool I'm glad you brought that one up.
I think it's something we need to think about is all.
What
that's
happens?
All I'm getting
like, at. So you just... Go. What happens for you then, Jersey? Like, so you mentioned, you know, the being moved. I mean, what is that?
What's the quality of
what's
of
the that? Yeah? What is the choice? Actually, I mean, the quality I think is pretty clear, right? So yeah. Something that, like you mentioned, that just hits your coat of arms. But what happens when it just, like, you know,
when it makes you engage
where them? why did that reaction go public versus just not?
Because it was something that I perceived as filling a void. It was something that needed to be there that wasn't there before. It's not enough for it to just be a good drawing or a neat illustration. It has to be something where, for me at least, to get really excited about it. I mean, there's things that I get automatically excited about, like things that I'm already invested in, right? Like, Rob, you went to a concert a while back and you actually tweeted or Instagram photos from the concert, right?
Yeah.
But it was a metal concert. I mean, you already have, you know, an investment in that genre, in that, you know, you're going in for a good time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to please you, or easier to please you. Like, it's easier to get you in the door, right? When it's that.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. It's on my radar.
Yeah.
But there's something else. So when you get moved, I think you pointed at something. So you're getting moved, and it sounds like what you're describing is almost like an advocacy, where it's like, that's it. This, more of this world. That's what you're saying.
Joe Gillespie is in the Q&A, and he asked something terrible. The book that I was just referring to, the You'll Be Safe Here page, is from a page of Dean Tripp's very, very powerful comic called Something Terrible, which you can get at deantripp.com, and I highly recommend it. It's 99 cents, and it's worth way more than that. It's a short story, but it if you're not moved by it, you're an inhuman monster. He's asking when Dean was on Comics Are Great, and yeah, it's one of my favorite episodes we've ever done of the show, and I want to look it up real quick. I want to say it's 77, but I'll just look.
And to be honest, it's actually one of my favorites, too.
Yeah, I mean, I really hate saying stuff like that publicly, because, like, I love all the shows, and all the guests are awesome, but every once in a while you do one where it's like, whoa, it's going to be hard to top that one.
Yeah, exactly. It's an awesome, right. Obviously, Comics Are Great is an excellent podcast series that everyone should listen to and subscribe to, in addition to
it was episode 79. Comics Are Great 79, the final superhero discussion with Dean Tripp and Dan Mishkin, and we unbox what makes superheroes work. And I think I said at the end of that episode, I was sitting in the room with two of the most sincere men I've ever talked to, because Dan and Dean really, really love superheroes, and they really understand them. It's a great episode. This isn't me tooting my horn here. This is me just saying, like, no, these guys really brought their A game, and it was a fantastic discussion, and I got a ton of positive feedback on it. So yeah, comicsaregreat.com/CAG79. You can check that out later.
Because
right now we're doing Lean to Art. And
well, so, yeah, don't change the channel yet.
It's in the same feed that this video will be in after this live stream is done. So did we walk around that there?
We absolutely did. And we even, like, as we were, you know, walking away from it, we went back. We went back for one more.
One more nod from Mr. Miyagi. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then with that, I think it's time we get into topic. And I want to start with an upbeat. An upbeat transition. I think this is going to be a fun one. And it's one that I feel like we've edged this topic a lot in the past when we talked about, like, project organization. We talked with David Say on the show. Fantastic guest. We talked about, like, you know, time management. But we haven't really addressed this one head on, in my opinion. And I also, like, as I was thinking about it just today, I was thinking, like, wow, I've been podcasting long enough now that the stuff we're going to talk about today didn't exist when I first started podcasting. A lot of it didn't, at any rate, right?
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Notes. notes and where to keep your notes, how to organize your notes. And, you know, we've talked a lot about ubiquitous capture. We've talked on the show and in some of the classes that we did about keeping different capture kits. A few years back, my car broke down and I was taking my wife to work. I didn't bring any of my stuff with me. I just like threw on a jacket and drove her to work. And then the car broke down. And I was stranded in the car for 2 hours waiting for the tow truck. And I had nothing to write on. And it was a perfect opportunity to start grabbing ideas or sketching some stuff or using that time effectively toward my creative work. And I had nothing to work with. And so I was just standing there, you know, looking at my phone. And I remember that was like one of those like never again moments. I was like, okay, from now on, I don't leave the house without something on me, or make sure that there's something in my car. There's something in every jacket. So like in every jacket I have, I keep a little pad of index cards and a pencil. Just in case, you know, I may never use it, but just in case I need to grab an idea someplace. And, you know, there's lots of different composition books. Every school year begins, I go to the stores and grab a whole bunch of composition books. Or you might carry around your emergent task planner with you, but or your phone, right? You can tap ideas into your phone using your Notes app or whatever. But once you've got all these ubiquitous capture devices, what do you do with all that stuff afterwards, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, so if you're used to the habit of actually capturing the thoughts, I mean, that's an interesting thing to note. So you noticed when the thing was gone and you said never again, right? Yeah. That must have happened in my life ages ago where I don't even remember. I don't remember when I was away from having notes. I think the only thing that happened was the notes were stored in better things, better, like, so I would just fold up paper and scribble anywhere I could on a piece of paper and fill it up. And in my teens.
Wow.
And then eventually that led to being more organized about it. But yeah, I don't like forgetting stuff and writing stuff down. Yeah. So the capturing, but then then what do you do with it kind of thing?
Yeah. And actually, before we go into that, I want to back up just real quick and kind of address this topic because we are 10,000 feet up now. This is the abstract portion of the show.
Yeah.
I remember another example of what a wonderful time we live in now, as opposed to 15 years ago even, is I remember going to a comic convention in the early 90s, and I had a notebook that had like 3 years of notes in it. And a lot of the stuff probably wasn't good, but I left it in my hotel room. And as I was driving home, I was like, oh my gosh, I left my notebook in the hotel room, you know? And so I called the hotel and like, you know, I was in this room. Is the book there? No, it's gone. It was just gone. Nowadays, we can put it on a note card, but then we can take a picture of it, scan it, drop it into whatever cloud service we want. And we've got, you know, not only ubiquitous capture, but ubiquitous backup to all this stuff, which is pretty nice. But let me ask you a question first, Rob, before we dive into talking about these different softwares. For the person who doesn't do ubiquitous capture, for the person who didn't have that never again moment, why? Why capture ideas everywhere you are? Do I have obsessive compulsive disorder that I have all these different kits everywhere with me? What benefit does it have to do capturing ideas everywhere?
I'm not a doctor, but I would say it is an interesting compulsion. I don't know. I don't know what caused me to be so obsessed by it. It must be, I assume it was, forgetting, probably back in that time, maybe forgetting a phone number or something. And, just some kind of friction where I'm like, this is annoying and I would rather write it down. And also I think it was like, I wanted to capture poetry and lyrics and whenever things hit me, because, I felt like, if I don't capture it when I have the idea, I have lost something. And I think I'm a little less intense about that now, maybe because I just capture almost everything all the time. But like, I really would bum me out, like to like have an idea for a lyric or something and be like, I love this, and then not be able to retrieve it later.
Well, if you're an artist, Rob, if you're a true creative person, inspiration will just happen. it'll just trickle down from the gods, and it'll get in your brain when you need it. You know, quit trying to protect yourself from the future.
That is a problem. Time travel and all those darn paradoxes. I do think it's a little bit of, I'm wanting to control the, or steer away from a bad situation. I think that is part of it, where, you know what, if I have all my ideas, they're not lost to me. I don't have to wait for this, for the inspiration, because when it happens, I'm ready. Because sometimes when I sit down to write those things, they just don't come to mind. At least that was true when I was, you know, earlier on in practicing making things. But so here you are, like so you get a client that's like, yep, design a thing for me. Maybe some of that's writing, maybe some of that's visual, maybe all of it's visual, maybe all of it's writing. And they're like, and I need it by tomorrow. So what do you do then?
Yeah. Inspiration.
Yep. Just go inspiration. Come on. And just, yeah. Hold your breath. I mean,
I use the holy syllable Om, and I sit in the lightning posture, and just happens. No.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this inspiration thing, that is a thing. I get inspired. The thunderbolts strike me when I least expect it. And I go, wow, that's a great idea. And sometimes it happens when I'm actually working. But a lot of times it happens when I'm not working. A lot of times it happens when I'm doing something else. Like I'm at the grocery store. I'm driving home from work. I'm, you know, doing laundry. You know, when your body is doing some menial task, dishes. Oh, man, dishes. You're doing the dishes. That is when a lot of stuff hits me. You know, doing something like that with your body that's like very rhythmic and you're not thinking all that much sometimes can let those ideas in, and then that's when it's time to capture. So, second question. What kind of things are we putting on these things, these note cards and notebooks and stuff? What are we capturing when we say capturing ideas?
Well, I think anything, honestly, right? I mean, you're making markings on a page, and those markings can be letters or shapes or words or whatever, diagrams, relationships among things, rough layouts for anything, like how you want to move the furniture around in your house to like comic pages to whatever. I mean, it's just things like you could be doing that task, but you're currently committed to or not in a position to do the task, so you could just write about it and then maybe refer to that when you have opportunity to act on it. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of the not really the what?
Every time Rob and I talk on Hangouts or when we have meetings between shows, I'm always jotting down what we're talking about on these cards because I'm not going to remember later, for one. And two, so like here's, these are notes from Lean Into Artcast. Oh, here, well, let me pull you up so you can show your cards, Rob.
Oh, totally. Okay. So yeah, this deck is from Lean Into Art Meeting Notes and Planning for Extra Lean on the 17th of this month. So this stack is just from one meeting.
Wow.
And then this is sort of a stack of like the greatest hits from recent months for Lean Into Art. And it's named Lean Into Art 2.0. Woo. And wow. Yeah. And it's a pretty big stack. But anyway, there's just so many things that happen as we're meeting that... writing them down now, I think you brought up an interesting point in preparing for the show in that these ideas that we're capturing are a resource to mine.
Yeah.
That when you do sit down to do the thing, maybe it's not exactly what you captured already, but like this might get you closer, which I think is really natural as far as like a general creative flow. I don't know if you've like a few different places I'll run into creative process advice that usually relates to you have a generative phase where you're either hunting for or blurting out ideas, but then you have a phase that you are then culling or associating those ideas or refining them. And then maybe a later phase where you're critiquing and getting even tighter with them and whatnot. And I think that the whatever you're capturing, whether it's, you know, and it's not, it doesn't just have to have to be in, on the note cards. It could be with your digital camera now, right?
Yeah.
It's generative reference for later and a more future phase of your creative process.
Definitely. Yeah. And I have, an example where I have some David Say task order slips. Have you seen these before, Rob?
Yes.
Right here next to my dry erase board, and I don't use them that often, but it's like whenever like a quick thing comes in to interrupt my day, like, and it happens. You know, I got on my Trello board, here's the three things I got to do today. All of a sudden I get an email saying, hey, Jersey, this needs to be updated on the Kids Read Comics site. Or, hey, Jersey, here's a quick, you know, it should only take an hour freelance illustration gig that you can't say no to because the money's too good. And so I have to insert it in my day. And so then that's where these task order slips come up. And it's sort of like a one slip version of the David Say Emergent Task Planner. DavidSay.com, everybody. He's got amazing productivity tools on there. Love his stuff. Anyway, so some ideas occurred to me one day for the layouts for a book that I was working on. This was the Captain Seriously book that people can find on my Google Plus feed. And I didn't have anything nearby to capture it on, and I wanted to get it while the iron was hot. And so I grabbed a couple task order slips, flipped them over, and I don't know if you can see. And there you go. Now,
wow, yeah, thumbnails.
Yep.
Wow, those are some pretty tight thumbnail layouts, Jersey.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh.
There's a lot of action on those pages, and that's a lot of panels. And what, that each of those thumbnails is what, like what, 2.5 inches, inches
maybe,
tall?
Maybe like 2 inches tall. Yeah, maybe each.
Yeah. So. Anyway.
So, but yeah, like grabbing it everywhere is the big idea. And it can be anything. It can be character ideas. It can be, I'll even jot down philosophical wonderings. Here is a thing that I noticed that philosophically bugs me. I'm going to grab it and put it someplace because that may be something I can go back to as a resource when I'm trying to find what's the nut of the story I'm working on, right?
Totally.
Rob's holding up his philosophy.
I have a whole deck for philosophy.
Wow.
This is probably a shocker to any listener of the podcast or anyone who's ever worked with me ever.
And like, you said, you got a digital camera on you in some form most of the time, right? So like photo reference. Oh my gosh, that's a grill on that car. You know, the front of that car has a really cool design. I may want to use it someday. Dan Mishkin was recently at a location that we're going to use in a book together. And he had the presence of mind to walk around and grab as many pictures as he could while he was there and then sent me a big fat folder of them. I was like, oh my gosh, God bless you. You know, that's the best thing ever to be able to be that present and not just like be, even though he was hanging out with friends, he still made sure that, oh, while I'm here, let's grab stuff.
That rocks. Exactly. That is like sort of ubiquitous capture, a creative mind just saying, okay, these ideas are coming to me. And it's not like he finished the whole task. He probably didn't hold up his friends too long when he was doing that, I imagine, right? Mm-hmm. But he probably set himself up and you up, other collaborators on the project to be, you know, better prepared for the next, what was coming up next. And it reminds me of Scott Pilgrim behind the scenes information where Brian Lee O'Malley was showing how he took a lot of photographic reference of locations that totally fed the later stages of the creative process. Was a huge resource.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, story ideas, interesting settings, landmarks, you know, character ideas, just general sketching, doodling, sentence fragments. Question.
Yes.
What form do these captured items take? Lucas Haig is in the chat.
Yep.
And he suggests one form that notes can take. As he says, recording audio notes on a phone is the one way I do this if I do it. And then he puts in parenthetically, I still adhere to the idea that if you can't remember it when you get home, it probably wasn't that great of an idea. That might work for you, Lucas, but my memory, as good as it is about certain things, is so bad at other things. When I went to see Pacific Rim, which I was very excited to see when it came out, because giant robots, monsters, pretty awesome. I got to the theater. Honest to God, I got to the theater. I could not remember the name of the movie. And I stood in front of the ticket seller, and I said, giant robot movie. and oh, Ann said to me, she's like, what are you, 70?
You know, that's awesome.
Yeah. So,
it's easy for those, maybe that's a side effect. Perhaps it's age. I think it's floating in ideas all the time, and you know,
probably
some of them just sort of hang out in a big idea soup together. tough to identify one from the other.
Yeah.
When you're at the moment of pressure, but I think it's Lucas has a really good point where there's that other. The capture is just a helpful memorization act as well, which I know that's getting a more towards on the ground, but you are exposing yourself to the ideas. So if you think of it as, we chatted a little bit about sort of the creative process and sort of the evolving, the progression of an idea from a rough state to a more complete state through different creative stages. I think how we see and understand the world, our cognition affects this. So we take an idea that's kind of ephemeral. We solidify it, and then it kind of fades away. We go back to what we were doing, but then we have sort of made a few more neural connections with that thought, and then that goes back into the back of our minds. So we're doing some perhaps emotional processing on it, other background thinking.
Well, actually, Lucas's contribution to the discussion leads me to a big question I wanted to ask you, and then I want to talk about sketch notes, because you were posting some sketch notes recently, Rob. But Lucas says, you know, if you can't remember it when you get home, it probably wasn't that great of an idea. And part of that is, I think it speaks to, you know, when you got a good one, like, this is good and I'm excited about it. You know, this isn't just me saying like, boy, ice cream cones on the moon, that's pretty cool, right? You know, this is like, there's a difference between that and when, you know, this is a humdinger of an idea and I better hang on to it. And you think about it the whole way home kind of thing, right? So, Now here's one for us both to tackle. And this is almost curveball. This is like what I call in the Comics Great Show, like a squishy question, because I don't think there's like an easy answer. How do we know what's worth capturing and what's not worth capturing, so as not to create a crazy person's tome of notes that we inevitably can't swim through in the end? How do we know that this is the humdinger and this is just like me being whimsical? What's the difference?
I would propose that there is no inherent difference, and that you only could discern that on reflection and slowly over a long period of time refining your taste in what you choose to capture. Because what you would need is a heuristic to filter that. And how would you even know that at the time, other than having experience doing it wrong for a while, or doing it in a way where you're like, well, that wasn't useful. I don't ever refer to that thing. Or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I do.
Wow, that thing saved me. Like, if I didn't assemble that stack of image, that the visual reference, I would have been screwed on that next project that came up. And then, so you know what saved you, what sucked, and then you have to discover it. I would argue, as far as what fits.
actually, I'll back that up with personal experience, is that there have been ones where I go, that is the one. That is it. That is so good. And I'm a genius for coming up with that one. And then I put it in the book. I come back to 2 days later and I go, what was this? What was I thinking? This isn't good. This is rubbish.
My brain gave me dopamine for no reason at all.
And I was grateful for it at the time. But now I look at it and I go, what were you thinking, brain? Yeah. And then other times I've jotted down things just completely, you know, it was a throwaway idea that contributes to or helps unlock something else, you know.
And I think that's the inherent gotcha with this, is that there's the capture, there's the further exposure to the idea through the capture, but then the future test of the reference, and then what you do with the reference. Because you could use a rough, crappy idea to then totally spin off into something else. It's a catalyst. You're just re-exposing yourself to your own catalysts.
All right, so then let's talk about sketch notes, because I think that this is an interesting form of note-taking that you were recently sharing on your Instagram feed. By the way, Instagram.com/Rob Stenzinger, am I right?
Yes.
People should follow you there. You post some really, really cool photos, and most recently you posted a series of sketch notes that you were taking at a conference. And sketch notes, for those who haven't seen them, oh, I should pull up your Instagram feed, actually.
Sure.
Thank could you explain what a sketch note is while I pull them up, Rob?
Yeah, certainly. I don't know if you're seeing this at all also, yep. Just as a preview, but anyway, this is the Moleskine that I captured those notes in. But yeah, sketch notes is this, I mean, in general, it's doodling, and it's doing some visual capture mixed with scribble notes. And perhaps utilizing some fontography, for perhaps not, and doing some free association as you capture. And it's pretty much like writing in your notebook when you're bored in class, except it's taking that, it's doing it even if you're not bored, and finding these the other benefits to it. So I kept using this purposeful label sketch notes as a compound word, because this is sort of a movement and a book that Mike Rohde has been fronting and advocating. And he's done some interviews on various podcasts, and I recommend checking out his blog and whatnot, and of course the book Sketch Notes. It's just really inspiring in similar to the style of like how Jersey teaches comics. And it's like, you can look at this medium of all this stuff sitting on a page and go, how in the world would I do something like that? That's meaningful or beneficial. And how could I take advantage of panels and word balloons and these characters, and some are round and some are pointy and some are whatever. And, the sketch notebooks gives you a really nice tour of, okay, all you're doing is you're capturing ideas, and you want to hold yourself to the concepts and not the very explicit expression, right? So you would draw a person-shaped thing as opposed to a specific sketch of a person. That would take you, even if you were a very fast artist, that would probably dominate the page, and you would be missing out on all sorts of other ideas. If you're all of a sudden, you know, drawing lots of bicycles in perspective and you know, whatever, right. Spider-Man swinging from a building, even though if that perfectly captures one idea, you're letting go of that and saying, I'm getting these symbols on the page and I'm writing down other stuff. And then, as you go, this is sort of, I forget if this was mentioned in the book or if it just came from, stepping back. So I went to the UI18 conference this week, and it was an awesome event. And it's essentially a place where people who do some sort of user-centric design for interactive stuff will go and learn from. And whether it's you just are a person on a team of people like that, or you're one of those people, it's about experienced designers of various sorts coming together, practicing and learning from different people who have interesting things to say about it, the craft. And I, for some reason, started doing the sketchnote thing. I think part of it was, like when I first learned guitar, I'm like, the power chord is pretty cool. I don't really care that I didn't invent the power chord, but this is pretty fun. I'm going to do a lot of them. And I'm like, I always wanted to do the sketchnote thing. And I was in a situation where I'm like, this is perfect. I dabble in it, but I'm like, okay, every session I go to, I'm going to do this. As soon as I started to dabble in it, perfect opportunity. And part of the reason is exactly what we're talking about today, which is, okay, I need to get these ideas down. I'm going to be sitting through so many interesting things and slides and cool speakers and having good conversations with people and doing workshop exercises. How am I going to remember all that, you know, a day, a week after this event? And I thought, well, I'm going to really go Mike Rohde style into this and try to apply all that stuff, which, you know, even if you haven't read the book, you can just kind of go for it, right?
Well, as I'm looking at the notes, and I've got his book too, and Ann and I have both been reading it, is he uses a lot of the same principles of comic storytelling, using shape, size, and line and color to communicate meaning and context and tone and importance. You know, as we were, I was flipping through your notes on the screen while you were describing how it all works, and like, yeah, that's comics that you're doing on there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah. So having done it, you know, when you're at the conference, did you notice any difference in the way you thought about or remember or reflect upon the information that you were swimming in during the conference?
Yeah, I think it helps with recollection a lot, especially with the practicing that approach of that style of taking notes. There are, I mean, obviously it's personal and everyone, you know, it needs to, you know, your mileage may vary, but what I found was hearing, just allowing the ideas to sort of, you know, flow through, to listen, to look up every once in a while, but not be panicked. Don't worry about like, oh, I missed most of that slide. I only saw it for a couple of seconds or whatever. But just making sure I was getting these things that felt more aha to me at the time. And then augmenting them with like, oh, I'm just going to describe that one or this one. I just feel like drawing a cliff and someone looking down it. And now later on, I find that there's another concept that relates to that. So there's actually layers. And so I kind of wish I had video of seeing how some of these progressed. Because it's not linear. It's not like it, like you look at it as one complete thing, just like you look at a finished comic page. Yeah. There was many stages that went through. Like even these sketch notes went through many stages of association of concepts. And that creates this interesting web of association that now I can look at and remember some really, really helpful points. So
yeah, I don't know about you, but like when I'm listening to podcasts or music while I'm working on my work, I'll go back and look at some pages and I can remember what podcast episode I was listening to of whatever show when I'm looking at like, oh, when I was coloring this debris, I was listening to this particular episode of this show or this whatever, you know? So like, I imagine it would also help with memory retention as well.
That is part of the idea of what's proposed. I have not scientifically tested that, but I do feel like my retention is improved, whether that's just not while not looking at them or especially when I'm looking at them. When I'm looking at them, all sorts of memories start getting triggered.
Well, but I mean, even aside from that, let's even throw that aside. Let's say it doesn't help your memory at all. You're also just using the skill set that you're trying to achieve as a visual storyteller to collect data. Right.
Yeah.
If nothing else, it's going to help improve your visual storytelling capabilities by keeping notes in that way. Right. So, OK, moving on to the last point before we got to get into on the ground. So we hinted at that there's lots of different ways. Like Lucas brought up the fact that we've got these phones that we can record audio notes on or iPod touches or whatever, you know, get some kind of recording device on us. We got digital cameras. Where are we going to put it? We're going to put it, you know, I said, you know, we got like these cloud storage options now. We got things like Evernote and Pinboard and Pinterest, and we're going to talk about them more in more detail in the on the ground section. But how do we evaluate which ones we want to use? There are so many now. It seems like every week a new cloud storage company pops up, you know. How do we do you have a means to evaluate this, or are you sort of like, let me make an account and dabble with it and see how I feel about it? Oh, like for instance, Trello, we both use Trello, right?
Yeah.
There's another competing app called
Wunderlist.
What's that?
Wunderlist?
Not Wunderlist. No, it was another like bulletin board type thing with like a circle metaphor. Drop Task was that. And so I checked it out because it had a really cool, you know, slick interface, and it followed basically the same kind of metaphor as Trello does, being like this board of cards where you drop tasks into it. But Drop Task used a circle metaphor where like the more tasks you drop in each circle, the bigger the circle gets, to kind of help represent this idea of the scale of the project that you're building. But I didn't wind up using it, you know, like it was an interesting interface, but I felt like, well, it already did what Trello was already doing. So, you know, there was a point where I said, like, I'm not going to invest any more time into this. And the developers start sending me emails like, why are you using our thing anymore? What can we do to keep you? I'm like, well, I've got some investment in another competing application, and I only got so much bandwidth to keep trying out new things. But in engaging with it for the first time and evaluating, is there any kind of rubric that you use, or any kind of like, you know, question investigation that you use to determine whether or not you want to use one of these different cloud note services?
Well, let's see. I like to, what is the capture and the retrieval experience like? And are there interesting ways to experience the information captured? So maybe neat visualizations or helpful ways to slice and dice what's captured. And if any of those feels natural and intuitive, that's a strength. And that's where I would start, and as far as feeling things out.
Yeah, so you look for intuitive experience.
Simple to store, simple to retrieve, and then simple to explore and find new relations. Because, of course, if you're capturing a lot of things, that becomes a new resource to manage. And if it's hard to manage that resource, then it's not as the tool starts to get in the way. And then I start to feel regret as far as like I have trapped data in this tool. Now what? So now I know I'm displeased with this tool, and I would like to replace it. And, you know, now I have to migrate and all that stuff. I mean, that's frustrating. So that's why I don't just move in with it all my data on day one.
Here all I right, am. I got my two bags.
Here's my whole brain in the sky. Let's go.
Yeah. Actually, to back that up, I think that's part of the reason why I wound up sticking with Trello, is not just because I already had been using it for a while, but because the metaphor of cards on a list on a wall felt more intuitive to me than circles that change shape or size depending on the amount of things I throw in that bucket. You know.
Well, interesting. You know, so as a design choice, I mean, so the circles, was that primarily was that part of your primary experience for interacting with your list?
Yeah.
Or was the circle like the view you saw before you got to your list?
No. Well, at the time I used it, I think since then they've implemented also a card structure similar to Trello that you can flip back and forth in between. But at the time I was using it, the primary way you interacted with your items in your projects was a circle metaphor. You have X amount of circles on the screen that you keep adding them. And so I'll have a circle for home projects, this particular comic, freelance work, that particular comic, and I would throw in to-do items, which are also circles, into those buckets, and then the buckets would grow, or the circles would grow with each item that I added, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which was really cool. It looked really cool, but inevitably what felt more intuitive to me was a list of cards that I could just move, and I could rearrange like the different ordered lists of cards. That felt more intuitive and natural, right? But I've also got, you mentioned, like, you know, I don't just walk in with all my data and go, here you go. You mentioned like getting the data out too, you know, interoperability. How well does this app work with other apps? Can I get this stuff out of there easily if I need to? Can I make this app interact with other things? Like, can I make it interact with my calendar? Can I make it interact with, can I get to it on my phone, my desktop, and any other platform? I mean, what if I've got a Unix or, I mean, a Linux machine in the house? Can I get to it from all those different places, right?
Yeah, exactly. Both for capture and retrieval. And or what aspects am I trading off on these different platforms where I would like to use it?
And then I had a point written down, trustworthiness, and Lucas raised in the Q&A app. Lucas says, rule number one for cloud services, read the terms of service. Rule number two, read the terms of service.
Yeah. Absolutely. So trust is another thing, right? So what are you storing, and do you trust someone else with it? I've sat on pretty extreme sides of that in the past, where I've been on projects working on games in the 90s where I would send every email as a PGP encrypted.
Wow.
About the project, boom, PGP encrypted. If I'm talking with you, you signed an NDA. I know. I've mellowed out a lot since then. I don't know. I'm sorry for everyone I've worked with that had to experience that.
But you're raising a good point, though. You are sharing potentially very sensitive information with some of these, with third parties, right?
Yeah.
What are they going to do with that? What's their monetization scheme? I mean, if they are a free service and they don't have some way to opt into a higher tier of pricing or like some kind of premium plan, how are they making money off of this? What are they getting out of this data that you're giving them? That's definitely an important question to ask, right?
Very important. I think there is a good rule of thumb that if you aren't paying for a service, then you're the product. So that's your activity that is generating data in that service, and that is going to be mined in some way, shape, or fashion to monetize the service. So the servers, the coding, the UI, all sorts of people need to get paid to do that thing. And they're either you're paying them or a sponsor's paying them to somehow look at what you do. And not exactly looking at your data, but something. And so, yeah, you're reading the terms of service.
Reading the terms of service to make sure that there's an equal value exchange. And I'm not saying this is what you're saying, Rob, but you hear this a lot in media right now, is this whole idea of privacy and what are these companies getting out of your data. And it is a valid, very important concern. It's a discussion that should be going on.
Mm-hmm.
But there are cases where the exchange is of such value, like the service they provide you is valuable enough that I am willing to hand over some of that data, right? So I've got Google Now, and I love it as a service. I love the fact that my phone buzzes and pings me and says, hey, you know what? You got an appointment in 15 minutes, and I just charted your driving directions to the place where you were supposed to be. And if you want to get there in time, you got to leave now. That is awesome. That is so future that my phone just does that for me. In order to get that service, I have to let my phone follow me around everywhere I go, and Google knows where I'm going all the time, right?
Right.
That was a conscious decision that I made to say, I'm willing to sacrifice that, I'm willing to give that to them, and let them monetize that information in order for me to have this wonderful feature on my phone where it makes my life a little bit easier. But that's a decision you have to make for yourself, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's worth reading. And you know what? I also, let's see, if you start habitually reading terms of service because of this, good on you, and also sorry. They really suck to read. But it's worth exploring that. because right, we use to help run Lenient Art, we use some paid services and we use some free services. Mm-hmm. Like we coordinate our tasks via Trello, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Amongst other things. So with that, you think is there anything else to add on this before we go on the ground and start talking about specific services that we use and how?
I think that was I think we mapped it out. I think it's time to let's dive in.
All right. Boy, that transition music makes it sound like I'm going to go, and now we're going to talk about these wonderful products that you can have today for free, like Evernote, Google Keep, Google Drive.
I love it. That's like the Jersey Don Pardo announcer. Tell me what you didn't win or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that was that. I lost that Jeopardy, the Weird Al song.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God, that is the best when he does the whole, you also made yourself look like a jerk in front of millions of people. He has the best sense of humor ever, Weird Al. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
All right, so what cloud storage solutions have we tried and how do we use them? So we talked about why we capture, how we capture, what do we do with it, you know, after we've captured. I want to talk about Evernote, Rob, specifically. That's the big one that I want to talk with you about, because you use Evernote a lot.
Yes.
What was that?
I have used Evernote more even in the past. I used to, use Evernote to, anything I thought of or took a picture of or what have you would go into Evernote. Like I put, where now I split things up a little bit. Evernote has a huge role in my week to week flow of capturing ideas and researching and stuff like that. But, but it has evolved. So it's kind of like, I have so much stuff in Evernote. It's almost like there are dinosaurs buried under some of the data and there's sedimentary layers that show the stages of my Evernote.
I pulled up my Evernote on the screen and I use it.
Oh, cool. I may not pull up my Evernote.
Well, no, and I'm not showing anything that I don't want people to see. I mean, obviously.
There's information leakage all over my Evernote. So,
well, I just did a search for my Comics Are Great notes because I use Evernote a lot for assembling the notes for Comics Are Great. So people can see how hard I work on this show, actually. This is the interface of it for those who've never used it. So you've got like a whole bunch of notebooks off to the side and you can have notebooks about anything. Like I've got like a links notebook where I collect links that I might want to follow up on later on. So that's my bookmarking that I do now. Instead of bookmarking in the browser, I do it through Evernote.
Oh, okay.
And then, like recipes, and then there's idea capture. So like they've got a Boulder and Fleet notebook in there. I've got, you know, a kids read comics notebook for when I have kids read comics meetings. That's where those notes go. But the thing is, and then I got my Comics Are Great one that I use for, you know, grading, assembling and producing the Comics Are Great shows. But the thing is, like, I don't feel like Evernote keeps rolling out more and more features. Like it's got like reminders and I think it has like tasks now. And like I keep hearing things about Evernote from people like from the developer and also from people who use it. Like they're like, well, the more you use it, the more useful it gets. And I don't know what that means. I guess I should say also is like some of the features I have used is like it's got optical character recognition. So I could take a picture of this cover of my emergent task planner and it would see the letters ETP, presumably. Yes. And then it would make that a searchable feature of the image. So even though it's a photograph, I would be able, and I've tested out with book covers. Like I'll take pictures of book covers in a store that I might want to like look into later on, and I can look search for it by author name or title because those letters were on the cover of the book, and Evernote can read that, and that's actually pretty useful.
Totally, yeah. And you're naming, yeah. I do those things as well. Like I've been an Evernote user for quite some time. I probably could look at my tags or something. Probably what, 2005, early 2006 maybe. So it's been a while, And like in one of the first notes I did, I did a test snapshot of Kate holding a book, my wife, and to see if it works, and it was like magic. So I'm like, common use would be taking pictures of whiteboards and these scribble notes, like, you know. So I held up my philosophy deck, or I'll do decks once in a while where there's all my thoughts on design or something. And I end up actually lately what I've been doing is instead of using Evernote to capture that many pictures, because it'll crash if I have a deck of like 20 or 60 or 100 cards. it's happened.
Wow.
But I will use the an app on iOS called Snap to PDF, and it's really stable and robust, and it captures in a high enough resolution where they're great reference, and I'm able to then mail that PDF into Evernote, and it pretty handy.
Interesting. I do a similar thing with note taking apps on my Galaxy Note tablet, where like I use Papyrus a lot to capture ideas. And I had, because in Papyrus you could make different notebooks for different projects. So I'll have like a Boulder and Fleet notebook, a Cat and Cat notebook. And once I've assembled enough pages, you can export it as a PDF and send it into Evernote, into one of your folders there for, you know, because Papyrus does have web, it has cloud services where you can back up your database to the web, but that's a premium feature. You got to pay like $3 to unlock that. Which I did, because I like the app and I want to support the developer, but also it's like I like to belt and suspenders everything. I like to have redundant backups in multiple locations, you know.
Well, and there's different capabilities. When you're taking notes that are handwritten, Evernote does handwriting recognition, and it not only does it do optical character recognition, so just looking for fonts within images and then capturing that as some background metadata that becomes searchable. But like it's doing that for handwriting too. And that is a giant killer feature that it's a huge aspect of what I use in Evernote.
How do you keep your stuff organized in there? I mean, are you relying primarily on tags? Do you rely on notebooks? Because I'll tell you, sometimes when I'm like, if I'm capturing an idea on a phone, right? I'll have my phone and the Evernote apps on the phone. That's another reason I love Evernote, is that it is available on, like, they put it everywhere. You can use it in Chrome. There's a Chrome, there's like an extension for Chrome, and like the web clipper that you can put on Chrome. And I think, can you put it on Safari? I don't remember. But
yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, the Evernote web clipper, because you can, it also will run as a service in OS X, and it'll just sit in your, the menu bar at the top of the screen.
Okay.
And so you can pretty much, and now it's like when you click into it, it actually has a big paste window that could be rich text or plain text. So you can drag and drop images in there. You can capture audio. You can like, it's kind of nuts. Like it's just this big place to go throw stuff into.
Yeah. And so sometimes I'm capturing on my phone and it's like, I just want to grab the idea quick and I don't want to think about where I'm putting it. You know, I'll grab an audio note, which I've done, like Lucas does. You know, like I'll be like, I remember an idea occurred to me for Boulder and Fleet while I was driving. And so pulled over to the side of the road, you know, cause you don't want to be monkeying with your phone while you're driving. And just pulled over to the side and I just did a quick, like 1 minute, like, okay, this is an idea for Boulder and Fleet. And this is going to happen. And this is going to happen. And this is going to happen. Bye. Click, you know, done. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to have to think about, okay, now to save it in this notebook and use this tag and use that tag. Are you having to go in and do maintenance on this stuff, or is search on Evernote good enough that you can find all your notes? I mean, what's your strategy for keeping track of all the stuff you're dumping in there?
I try to give things a good title, and then I will search based on my need to mine what I'm creating. And I think about what I'm, because I'm actually, Evernote, I don't use it for all my bookmarking, because I might have a bookmarking problem. So I bookmark a lot of things, and what I do now is actually I pay for the most premium version of Pinboard, And that fulfills an interesting role because the so Pinboard is premium. They call it bookmarking for social bookmarking for introverts, because you can be as, and it gives you all these controls as far as, like, by default, when you save a bookmark, do you want it to be private and all that kind of stuff. So it's a really cool service. Then if you pay for, like, one level up, it will index the content of everything you bookmark. And so that's like, that becomes this general repository to search. So if I find, you know, good tips for some cool plugin in jQuery or whatever, right? jQuery extension or, you know, whatever. It just, I find a lot of neat things that I don't want to forget about. So that general stuff goes in there. But then when I find really insightful, amazing articles, that's something I put into Evernote. And so it's not my full bookmarking thing or what have you. But it's this, but it's a really, really rich resource where I can search for just about anything that I think is, that I want to write about or that are researching for our podcast. If I search in Evernote, I have tons of ideas for just about anything that are all just kind of waiting there for me. And they'll be in a variety of forms. Now, most of them don't have tags, but I go through sort of task-based tagging sprees. So if when I'm doing so I do end-of-year planning and goals for the following year. I know people had, that's kind of polarizing and what have you, but for my planning, I look in Evernote and I'll do a combination of, I'll do targeted searches and I'll just sort of sift, just explore through it. That I use primarily one notebook and occasional task-based tagging. And so as I'm sifting through it, I'll start gathering posts that fit with, like, oh, 2013 planning, what have you, and I'll come up with that. Or, oh, you know, I'll say Lean Into Artcast number 87, prepare, you know, and I'll just tag a bunch of things that that fit some given task or some article I want to write or what have you. That's then, but so based on that task, then when I need to go about it, I can pull up a tag. I experimented over the years with using multiple notebooks and doing promiscuous tagging, but I find that it's mostly noise.
Yeah.
Because I can search to find most things. And the tagging has become most useful for me when it's like a task purpose.
I gotcha.
Or like once in a while. So like with, as long with the task purpose, I will do some general purpose things. Like I'll use some tags that are very steadfast and long-term, like game design, UX. Those are like really long-standing. They become like little specialized archives in the mountain of data.
But most of the time you're using tags like folders.
Yeah, like a less restrictive version of a folder, because yeah. the notebooks themselves are a lot like folders, and I will use a notebook to collaborate with someone else to share something in Evernote. But okay. That's typically the only time nowadays. I was experimenting with doing like a client specific status blog. So sometimes, you know, for some clients in recent years, I would say, hey, you want to see what I'm up to? I'm updating this like throughout the day, and just check out this URL because Evernote lets you share pages out of it. And that was a handy way where it's like, I know I can update it from any device and all that stuff. And I know it's going to be private. So that was pretty handy. Anyway, did I get to what you were asking for the,
well, no, I was going to keep digging at it a little bit. You got to some of it. Are there any other features besides optical character recognition that you really, really dig about Evernote? Was there anything about Evernote that you went, aha, this is going to be very helpful to me?
It's, I use the, oh, let's see. I use the emailing into Evernote feature a lot, and I use the, where you have a secret email address that has a, you know, whatever amount of garbledy characters that only you know, mm-hmm. and you just can email anything to it from anywhere, which I find really handy. But, and that was sort of, they were one of the first services to have done that, years ago. And so, yeah, that was an amazing, attractive feature initially. But I would say the killer thing is that you can store it there. There's low friction for whatever the heck you want to store in there. Only thing is, if it did speech to text recognition on audio, that'd be nuts. I don't even know what I'd do.
It'd be the old internet meme of shut up and take my money. You got to think they're working on that. You have to think. I mean, the fact that they have optical character recognition already, and they want everybody to just use it to this application to organize your life. It's interesting that, okay, so I thought that perhaps I was in the wrong on the way I do tags, because I really don't use tags at all. I just count on the search being good enough to find what I want to find.
Well, hold on. How do you organize the books in your house? How do you organize your, how are you into the discipline of organizing stuff in general?
Oh, I'm not good at it. I'm really not good at organizing my books.
Trying to critique it. When we collaborate and we're doing some planning and stuff, you organize awesomely and whatever. But I'm saying in general, like, are you someone who's really fastidious, like really attached to organizing? I think, you know, that's where tags start to get fun, where you're like, I'm always going to say, you know, this one's budget, and then this one is, wish list, and this one's whatever, you know.
And I just found that I never go back to those to go to search through my stuff. Like, I'll search for some keyword in the thing that I'm looking for, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's like, let's say it's an audio note that I did for Boulder and Fleet, and I'll be like, I remember jotting down some ideas about Boulder and Fleet. I'm going to look Boulder and Fleet, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, boom, here's all the notes that contain those words in it. So now I can sift through those to find the specific thing. And, oh, and 12 of these are audio files. Oh, I think I recorded it in December. There's the one in December, right? Usually search serves me pretty well that way.
So there you go. You have some natural metadata already with, like, so you get the date of when it was created or when it was, and you get the date of when it was updated. And if you just give it a title, then the overall, unless it's audio, Evernote will make the rest of the data pretty searchable and findable. So
characterize a good title for me. And this is really, I'm just asking for my own selfish purposes so I can think about titling my notes better.
I would say a good title is descriptive of the contents and perhaps your intent or relationship with those contents. So contents and purpose, or contents and motivation.
So audio note idea for Boulder and Fleet, book one, act three. Yep. Something like that.
Yeah. Wow. That would be a pretty fantastic title. Because then you could do book, you could do Boulder and Fleet, you could do Act 3, you could do Boulder and Fleet, Act 3. I mean, that's a really good title. And I say another thing is not too long. Mm. Don't go nuts. Don't write a book to make a title, because that becomes unwieldy.
audio note for Boulder and Fleet, Act 3, that I recorded when I pulled over to the side of the road on my way to Meijer to get groceries. I needed avocado that day because the one I had was kind of squishy.
Yes, exactly.
All right, do you want to talk about some of the anything else on Evernote before we kick over? I mean, we're probably going to come back to Evernote in a minute.
There's other, so do you want to hit any of the other funky things and whatnot?
This is one that a young former student of mine pointed me at, and it was an interesting way to use Tumblr. Mm-hmm. And what she told me is, she said, I create a private Tumblr log Because like Tumblr, for those who don't use it, is a place where a lot of artists share images freely and they get passed around a lot. So if you just follow a few artists, you're going to get a lot of reblogs in your feed. And usually those reblogs, depending on who you're following, they can be quite good. And I follow some people who have exquisite taste. And so they pump really, really cool art into my feed. And this is actually the Lean Into Art Tumblr feed gets a lot of interesting posts from, you know, the people who I'm just following on Tumblr, which I'll reshare to the Lean Into Art Tumblr. But if it's a good one that I, you know, just want to keep for my own personal reference, I've got a private Tumblr that's just called Jersey's Reference. You know, it's not public, only I can see it. And whenever somebody posts some interesting art that I might want to use as reference, like, oh, here's some really great color reference that a friend of mine posted, and so I drop it in there. It's just for me, and I can go back. And then this, I do use tagging, because since it is a linear linear method of searching, right? I'll tag it with like backgrounds. Here's one with costume and clothing, right? So somebody posted some, and all it was a post like, look at these cute outfits for young ladies. And I was like, well, that's good. I'm going to be working on a book, presumably next year, featuring young women in it. Grab onto it. More background and color reference than I'm showing on the screen. But whenever somebody posts something that I think, like, this is something I'm going to want to look at when I need inspiration or reference material for something, here's some nice one-point perspective of a library.
So now this is really handy. So you've got almost like this separate shelf of a given kind of resource where you're like, okay, you need some visual reference. You know of a rich, let's see, a rich repository that you've been creating of these things. Do you notice that you wish it were in Evernote or somewhere else? Is it a problem that it's not in one spot?
Here's the use case for me. This is the stack of art magazines on my coffee table. This is just a pile of art that I can flip through when I need to, because like I notice that I do not go back to it on a regular basis. But when I feel like I need to look at some stuff that makes me feel delighted and makes me really excited about art again. So like, let me go back to this post where the whole reason I chose it was because, man, these poses are awesome. I'm not like crazy about fairies or anything, but this guy, look at those poses. He's nailing it. This girl's like clipping her toenails. This fairy is clipping her toenails, and it just looks, the look on her face is just awesome. And it's a great pose. And what I love is the fluidity of all the figures, and like that's why I grabbed it. And I'm like, okay, whenever I want to remember that feeling that I'm going for when I'm creating poses, let's look at this. This is my magazine rack to flip through, just to get some neat ideas for stuff when I'm feeling a little bit out of sorts creatively. Does that make sense?
I think it totally does. I think it points to something that I've just noticed I gravitate toward is not everything has to be in one place.
Yeah.
Where there was a while when, not to keep returning back to Evernote, where I just I did try to put, I assumed like, oh yeah, everything should go there. And this is a perfect example. It reminds me of I've noticed how some people will use like Google Plus, even. Like they'll do they'll essentially create a repository by sharing things to Google Plus. Even though they're not, you know, it's just they know that their stream is like where they essentially socially bookmark.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, no. And I do the same thing with what Mike Elgin calls life logging, right? I've got a private circle that's just for me, and it's like, you know, if I want, I'm using it as a way to keep a diary. Right? I mean, and somebody could say, well, gee, you're sharing that information with Google. Yes, I am. But it's the information I'm sharing with them by leaving location tracking on my phone anyway. So I'm not putting like health records or anything on there. But it's like when I'm out and about and I want to remember, oh, I went on this nice walk in the park. It's not necessarily something I want to bother my friends with. I went for a nice walk in the park, you know, but I'll grab that and I'll shunt it into a private circle to, like you said, create a repository. And then which can actually be kind of useful at times when it's like, how old is this lettuce in the fridge? When did I go to pick up this lettuce? I don't remember for sure. Oh, I checked into Kroger on this date when I got, I can actually go back into my private Google Plus feed to.
That's fantastic.
Jog so, my memory. Yeah. So.
A food freshness use for like Foursquare.
I didn't think we'd actually go into those kind of places with this talk about cloud storage. But okay, well, let's talk about another place that's a repository. Mm-hmm. This one, I think you use a little bit, Pinterest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit. It's my use is very similar as to what you described that your Tumblr blog. Mm-hmm. It is Pinterest just seems to have a, well, so you describe your use of Tumblr is affected by the population of who you follow and the research, the things you're finding there.
Absolutely.
And I find that Pinterest is just full of people who care about a lot of visual things, whether they're desirable objects or it's just very visual. And so of course, a lot of artists have gravitated there, and I do a combination of following. It's interesting. It's one of the places where I get exposed to more physical world media, where it's not just digital painting and techniques. I noticed that it's like sometimes it's, you know, it's natural media, it's statues and installations, it's like art museum stuff, and I don't know, just a variety of things. That's even a minor component, because of course, as I continue to add people over time, I start, you know, gathering a lot of, you know, comic pose tips and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I use it for, primarily. It's so I will browse through it to feel good visual, just to experience good visuals. And then,
so you don't use it to collect any notes?
A little bit. It's more of a dabbling. Really, that stuff, if it's a key resource, I'm collecting that in Evernote. I do not have like just a strict policy with a lot of these services. I do a lot of feeling out. And I want to see what habit forms naturally, because I don't want to be stuck on one platform, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I like a little bit of the dabbling and finding the natural strengths of the given thing. I would say I use Tumblr and Pinterest almost in the same way.
Okay. Well, I have used Pinterest to create reference boards for projects. Like, oh, I'm doing a project that takes place, like, just as an example, 1920s England. All right, now let's go looking for photos that are from 1920s England, and I'm going to start pin as many as I can. Just, again, going back to that thing Dan Mishkin did for me where he was in the location, take some pictures. Well, I'm going to grab as much as I can and dump it into this, you know, reference board on Pinterest that will be a private board just for me. What I used to do, you know, 5-7 years ago was have an actual reference folder in every project on my hard drive.
Mm.
Right now I'm doing that increasingly more and more in the cloud, which, you know, has pros and cons. The pros are is that I can add to that wherever I am, because I'll have the Pinterest app on my phone, and if I come across something, dang, that's got to go in this particular reference board, right? That's a great color scheme there. But on the downside, yeah, I don't have it on my drive. So I have to be connected to the internet in order to get my materials, right? Unless I download them. Were there any others we want to talk about? Because I want to talk about, before we close, I want to talk about bringing it all together, because you've mentioned that, like, you don't feel the need to have everything in one place, or you like to dabble, you like to be in different places. And you asked me whether or not I felt like the stuff I put in my Tumblr magazine board or whatever magazine blog, whether or not I'd want that in Evernote.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything else, or did you want, or is it?
Let's cool see. To any other services? I would say I use a lot of Dropbox integrated note taking. So I do a lot of note taking in text form, also just plain text.
Mm.
So I use NV-Alt on OS 10. And essentially, I had a use for Evernote for exactly that.
Is this it, Rob?
Yes,
Brett
it is.
Terpstra?
Yeah. Yep. And it's a pretty fantastic lightweight tool for taking a lot of text notes. And it integrates both with just folders on a folder on your system, or you could have it connect with, I think, Simple Note in the cloud if you want. And so I do a lot of my text note taking there. And then I'm able to integrate with different tools on different platforms that can connect to Dropbox and just view a folder of text files.
I guess we should talk about that too, is that there's Dropbox, there's Box, there's SugarSync, there's what's that one that Kim.com did? Mega.co.nz.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, there's like 100 of those now.
A lot of competitors. Right. I mean, SkyDrive and Google Drive, and yeah, there's a lot of competition because people are finding they're using smaller devices and they still need to access a lot of data. So there's money to be made there. A lot of apps integrate with Dropbox really well.
Yeah.
They were, and are, I would say, the leader, or if not, you know, at least one of the leaders in this space. And just what does that mean to me is that they're just very reliable. And I do not recall ever losing data with Dropbox. And especially maybe there'd be problems if you aren't paying for the service, but because Dropbox actually saves versions of files. So if you accidentally delete something, you can go to the website and log in and recover it pretty easily. So it's, anyway, pretty handy service. So like even just the simple idea of I got a folder and I take some text notes and I have a tool that lets me search them really easily. That's very handy. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. And I'll use tools such as, I think I use WriteUp on iOS and then Epistle or something like that on Android. You just need a text editor that can point to a Dropbox folder. It's a pretty low hurdle. The other thing I use, which is funny, is a little bit of iOS centric. Well, it's totally iOS centric, but I use the app Drafts as a really quick way to capture. If I'm not using a note card to capture, I'm using Drafts to capture. And then I can do anything from I can send it to append to a file in Dropbox, or I could send it to OmniFocus, Evernote, whatever I want, right?
Is it from Agile Tortoise Drafts?
Yeah. Yes. Drafts from Agile Tortoise. Really handy. And what's funny is Drafts, if you enable it, it will do syncing on its own. So it's storing its draft notes in the cloud that you may then send to other cloud services. So anyway, another one worth mentioning.
Built for iOS 7. No Android version. Boo.
Yeah, Android could really benefit from that kind of app. It's just really handy. It's just super lightweight as far as you just open it up and it's ready to capture. You capture it and you go away from the app. You come back. It saved that other note. You can hit a button to go back to it, but it's default. Clean. Clean slate, ready to capture another note.
Shadowingtronics had a question in here a moment ago about lockers, L-O-C-K-E-R-Z.
Is that an image one, I think?
He says, how would lockers, let me select that question and we can try to address it. How would lockers be? I only have it because they absorb VODpod, which I needed for my site. So is lockers an image sharing? L-O-C-K-E-R-Z.
Oh, is that a, okay. It's a
social commerce website based in Seattle. The site claimed 19 million members as of July 2011.
So Oh, is this actually partially to sell stuff too? Anyway, yeah, I can't really speak to it. Not familiar with that service. So your shoppable fashion magazine. Oh, funny. So I wonder if you get some commission for posting stuff.
Ah.
Yeah. Like, this is an awesome shirt. You know, click on it and I get a commission. Get a slice. So anyway, interesting.
Yeah, we don't know much about that one, but I've got the page pulled up. We can link to it in the show notes.
It seems like that's I don't know if you would use that for a general purpose storing data. Totally cool if you do, but it really, to me, that would seem, if I'm understanding right, more of a looking for some sort of income through that. And yeah, sounds like a more of an affiliate or another way to earn stuff from your creative effort. Not necessarily a repository, but yeah. What what do you think, Jersey? Any other things in your arsenal that
So the way I've approached all this, at any rate, and this is just my approach, is that I try to think of all these things not being mutually exclusive. And I like to think of, again, search gets better and better all the time. So all I need is one gigantic, hole in the ground to throw everything I want to refer to later. I want to hoard links and I want to hoard images and hoard, my notes all into one place that I can search. But I don't want it all necessarily in one place that I don't have, that I could conceivably not have access to. Let's suppose, not going to happen, but let's suppose that Evernote goes belly up tomorrow, right? What happened to all my notes then, man? I didn't know that was going to happen and I didn't get a chance to get all my stuff out of there. I like to redundantly store all these things in multiple locations so that I have some kind of a backup someplace. And for that, I use if this, then that, which we've talked about on the show before.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So did you want to talk about what is if this, then that is, and then we can go through a demo of how it works and how we use it?
Yeah, sure. If this, then that is essentially a way to, you think of it as sort of it's like a cloud-based robot that notices events when you do things, and you sort of assign it tasks when those events pop up. And it's off, a task would be, oh, hey, if I capture a photo in Instagram, save it to my Dropbox.
Yep. So here we go. So making an if this then that rule is as simple as you click on this, and then it says choose a trigger channel. So I'm going to choose a service that I have linked to my if this then that account. Not all of these are, like my Gmail. That's way too much crucial data to me, personal data that I don't want a third party dipping their nose in. But other things like my Instagram is linked to it. My Pocket account, which is another note link grabbing application. And like I'll say, okay, Pocket, choose a trigger. So I said, I'm going to watch your Pocket account now, and I'm going to watch when things happen there. What do you want me to do, or what do you want me to act on? So any new item I add to Pocket, any new item that I tagged that I add to Pocket, so I can use like an if this then that like tag to say like Evernote or Pinboard, or whatever other service where I'm going to send this information. New favorite item, anytime I favorite something in Pocket, or new item archived, anytime I close and archive an item in Pocket. Let's just say I'm going to choose any new item. Anytime I add something to Pocket, I want something to happen. Okay, any that gives me my next step, create the trigger. What are you going to do when any new item is added to my Pocket account? Then I'm going to choose that. If this happens, then what else is going to happen? Now I'm going to say, go to my Pinboard account, and add a public bookmark, add a private bookmark, or add a read later bookmark. And so anytime I add something to Pocket, it's automatically, without me having to do anything, getting sent over to my Pinboard account. And then I can even, for this particular thing, create some tags. Like I can create, it automatically adds if this then that, Pocket, and I can add something else to it too if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
And then so that makes, again, that creates search parameters that I can go back and say, well, if this is something I added to Pocket, like I remember adding that to Pocket, but then I archived it, I don't know where it is anymore. Oh, well, I have it being sent to Pinboard. I can go to Pinboard, search for if this, then that, and Pocket, and now it's going to pull up all those links. And then again, I can like think about my own metadata. Like I remember I saved it at this time or whatever. Or it was essentially about this. It was essentially about, you know, orange shoes. Look for orange shoes. So then you create the action and then you give it a description and then you hit create recipe. And now it just does this for you in the background. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And you're mentioning some of this stuff happening for you in the background, and it's reminding me of a lot of our smartphones and so if you save photos into Dropbox, they want you to or if you take photos and Dropbox recognizes you're taking photos, they want to store your photos in the cloud. If you use an iOS device, Apple wants to store your photos in the photo stream, and then that can be on all your devices. If you use an Android that's a Google powered device, that it's going to want to store them in Picasa in the Google image cloud. And that's another thing too, where these are all, they're not as searchable as like an Evernote, but there's a lot of places where your photos could be, if you chose based on your preferences, just going automatically. And actually, if this then that could consume those as well.
Yep.
So you don't even have to be like intentionally posting. Just take a picture, and then as soon as that picture hits the cloud, if this then that could be acting on it.
Yeah, it's watching it in the background for you, and then it puts it in a place for you where you can get to it later. And I have some if this then that recipes going that simultaneously take anything I put in Pocket and put it into Pinboard and Evernote at the same time. And it puts it into very specific folders for me. So I just know that, okay, my links notebook in Evernote has everything that I've ever stored in Pocket. And then I also have a rule, anything that goes to that I specifically pinned to Pinboard also gets redundantly backed up in other places. I got things running on my Flickr account and my Instagram account to automatically back up those photos in other places where I can get them. Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked about this before. You are giving a third party access to your applications. And as Rob said on the show, nothing happens without trust. So you do have to have some trust involved here. And I mean, and as Lucas said, read the terms of service. And you have to make some judicious decisions on what you're going to let them have access to. Like I said, I did not turn on the Gmail channel in there. I'm not letting them have access to my email, but I'll let them have access to the websites that I bookmark, right? That's not as crucial to me. I'm not going to be putting banking information in there. I'm not going to be putting like my flight itineraries in there, right? This is just going to be things where I'm collecting resources and links and reference material, right? So
have you, speaking like very much along those lines, I just by the existence of this service, it vexes me because I don't trust it, but I want to use it so bad.
Yeah.
Is Cloud Magic. You ever come across this?
I have not. What is this? I'm looking it up.
I haven't used it. I don't trust it, but it searches across potentially everything. One place.
What?
I know. It's the worst temptation ever.
Oh my and God!
They, good for them for existing and fooey, because I don't know if I could ever trust it to use it. But
okay, so you have to give it access to all of your different applications.
You give it access to they're showing Evernote, Dropbox, Gmail, like everything, the iCloud, everything.
This is the serpent in the tree, dude.
I know. I'm just looking away, and I'm going to keep walking. But anyway, it's interesting where this is going, and I just I'm sharing that. And so who knows? A year from now, I might be hanging out in the tree. I don't know.
Yeah, Cloud Magic melds a user storage accounts and allows them. Those New York Times said this, and allows them to be searched. Well. That's what it does. It doesn't tell me if how good it is or how trustworthy there. Cloud Magic has gone mobile, promising blazing fast search. Ooh, this would be something to keep your hand.
Yeah, it would. I would have to do a lot of research before I would do that. So I'm just joking around because this has been around a while and I've In my cursory research, I chose not to do it. But anyway, interesting though, is like where this is going. Cause I mean, so what we have is some siloed trust and very specific. Yeah, I do trust Evernote. I trust Evernote a lot, and they have, you know, had, you know, their share of controversy as far as some of their terms of service and some of their security practices. But they've been consistently upgrading and have been customer centric enough over time. So I still trust them. And I obviously trust Google. I obviously trust Dropbox. But yeah, anyway, there's a, yeah, but one key for all of them is that creeps me out.
Yeah. I mean, right, that sounds like a compelling service, but boy, oh boy. Yeah. That is literally giving the keys to your house to somebody and saying like,
it is. Yeah.
Don't take advantage of it. You know,
that is a lot. That's yeah, maximum trust in a cloud provider.
Good luck anyway, to them. Just thought if they can pull it off, man, that'd be great. But yeah, but there's also another service that's kind of like If This Then That, that's called Zapier, that you introduced me to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's another service. So If This Then That is currently free, right? Yeah. That doesn't sit great with me.
No.
Because I feel a lot better when I have the clear relationship with I'm acquiring a service, and those terms of service often may read kind of complicated, but they're typically more straightforward as far as my relationship with the service provider. And hey, Zapier is kind of like If This Then That, except I do think they technically offer a free service,
here's the magic link here: plans and pricing, right?
Yeah, and so if you really want to use their service a lot, you're going to be paying for one of the memberships. I think you can do like what, two or three automations for free?
Five, something like that. Five automations for free, 100 tasks a month, and then the syncing happens every 15 minutes.
Sure. So they throttle a few things down, have a few limits, and I do think if you have tried If This Then That, it's absolutely worth giving Zapier a look, because they automate some different things. Like you can do some more interesting Google Docs automations. You can do automations with Trello and Google Calendar, for instance. Things that are just a little more obscure, a little more geeky, and I would say maybe they have more incentive to come up with those because, well, they're funded in that way. And I don't mean to cast the aspersions on If This Then That, but how they're funded is unclear to me. So,
right. No, that's important. That's important to bring into this discussion, right? But yeah, there's a lot of interesting channels here that I've never heard of. What's Happy Grasshopper? What's Hoyo? Lean Kit.
They integrate with some more obscure business to business kinds of things too. So, you know, small, medium, and large businesses might be using some of these services. And I don't even know the ones you named, but I've noticed it's escaping me offhand. But they integrate with like cloud finance systems and stuff. So,
yeah, I see like the one of the premium ones in here is QuickBooks Online, right?
Right. That's,
and there you're getting into some real, you know, juicy data that you'd want to have like some serious trust involved.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a lot of these I've never heard of, like Lighthouse. Some I have, but I just don't use, like Jabber.
Sure.
But yeah, that I'm seeing like regular, like ones that are recognizable, like Google Drive, Google Docs, Google Contacts, GoToWebinar, MailChimp. Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so there's like another option to look into. But the interesting thing about it is that it, for me anyway, is that it presents you with an option where you aren't stuck with redundantly having to do a bookmark or a capture in every place in order to make sure you have redundancy. You can link your Evernote to something like Zapier or If This Then That, and then every time I add a note to that, make sure it gets redundantly backed up in Dropbox or in Box.com or in Pinboard, some other place. So there's another copy of it someplace in case the worst happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
Although there's another risk that comes into play here, doesn't it? Where by putting it in more places, there's more opportunities for that data to get compromised by a malicious party, right?
Yeah, you're spreading out more trust.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're trading that off, right? You're saying, now I have to trust more people, yet I know that if one of them has a severe outage or something goes wrong or they go out of business, you have it backed up essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And by trusting a few more people, you got that backup kind of for free. One way to back up Evernote, which is worth mentioning, is that on the desktop versions of Evernote, technically I think on the tablet versions also, you can set it to say backup 500 meg, backup whatever amount of your data. The desktop version, you probably can throttle, but like I just have it back up all my notes. And then even if it doesn't have access to the internet, you can get to all your notes, no problem. And you can export them as well.
So when you sync out of Evernote, you're both syncing to the cloud and to your local drive.
So you're backing it up locally.
That's a good idea.
Unless you've like throttled that down.
It's a really good idea.
Yeah. A little old fashioned, but that works as well. So there are, let's see. Another thing to circle back to that I think we mentioned it a couple times, but like the OCR plus handwriting recognition, you know, two totally different things, but they kind of work together to make a more compelling case for Evernote versus just saying, yeah, I snapped a picture of that, no biggie. If you use a lot of whiteboards or you do a lot of scribbling on cards or whatnot, it all becomes searchable, and it's not perfect, but it's pretty good.
Yeah. Evernote is also, what am I trying to say? They got Sketch, that other like image capturing and annotation. Screenshot annotation, which you use a lot in a lot of your blog posts at agz.me, where you can find the Polytechnicast, which people should be checking out, which we don't talk about enough on the show. But because I noticed like a lot of the show art that you use, I can tell is annotated in Sketch. Like you'll just like do a screen grab and you'll put a few notes on there of like put what the title on there all in Sketch rather than opening up Photoshop, which is super smart. But and Sketch has a freehand note taking feature in it, which syncs automatically with Evernote. But I just wish it was a little bit more natural, because if you could do handwritten notes in Sketch on the tablet, that would be killer. Right, because right now what I'm doing is I'm jotting it down in like a different note-taking app, like Papyrus or in S Note on the Galaxy Note, exporting it as a PDF to Evernote for follow-up.
Sure.
But if I could do it all in Evernote, Evernote, if you're listening, the two things we want are voice transcription and natural handwriting within Evernote itself. Those two things get me really on board.
And so, Evernote did buy on iOS, they bought Penultimate. And so Evernote totally integrates with Penultimate, which is handwritten notes. And then they bought Sketch. So that's some convenient screen capture annotation. But they've also, this is crazy. Like, how much do you use the web browser extension for Evernote?
I haven't until I just watched a web video on the web clipper. And when I saw it in action, I said, I think I need to start using that. I was keeping my extensions and plugins down to a minimum in Chrome, because I'm just worried about it running slow or laggy.
Smart too. But if you are running that extension, they keep refining it, where the web clipper now, I mean, it does a few things where, again, that's how I save the articles that I think this is part of my rich repository that I must retain, you know?
Yeah.
And so when I do that, you can just click the button and then save that entire article. You can highlight it and just save a paragraph and whatever. And it's in either case, it's going to save, you know, the date, the time, the title of the page, and it's going to save, basically that metadata. Another thing you can do now is you can actually do annotation of the page. So like it will sort of, I guess, do some kind of, well, I actually don't know what technology they're using to do this, because you technically could do a lot of that with HTML5. Maybe they're rendering it to a canvas tag or something. I don't know. But like, it's, and then allowing you to write on top of it. But you can annotate right there from the Clipper.
And that annotation becomes part of the searchable data in the note that you took.
Yes.
Oh, sold. Putting the web Clipper on my browser tonight.
It's pretty handy. I use that quite a bit.
Oh my gosh. Well, that was worth it to get to that through all this episode. That was worth it to me.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a giant commercial for Evernote, but it's also, in general, like, so I guess let's take a quick second to say, like, let's think of a stupid, happy, helpy tip. If you weren't inclined to use Evernote, what would you do with this stuff? Like these handwritten notes and the whiteboards, especially.
Yeah, what alternative is there?
I'm guessing you would have to export them out of whatever your image stream is, just going to name images in sequence somehow, right? You're gonna basically, I think, have to add a little bit of metadata via exporting it with a title to somewhere that you could then search.
Flickr. I mean, if you have a private Flickr, I mean, like, because Flickr has that, like, they recently changed it to where it's like, well, you get 1 terabyte of storage now.
Wow.
You do not have to make those photos public, right? So you make it private only to you. You create private albums or photo sets, and the photo sets could be done like Pinterest private boards, right? Ton of storage.
Sweet. And you can totally store tags and metadata there, but you would be manually adding those.
Yep.
Yeah, cool. That's a good alternative.
Yeah, I mean, I would say either Pinterest or Flickr or... I mean, Tumblr, you could do it too, but yeah, I guess what you lose is you'd have to manually throw in that metadata, whereas Evernote grabs it for you, which is a pretty compelling case for why it's a good resource for grabbing that stuff. And then also the fact that it can grab any kind of media, right? Photo, audio, text, web clips, right? And then even with that web clipper, you can choose different formats for the way it grabs the web page. It can do a screen grab of the web page with the metadata about the web page. It can grab sort of like a cached version of the web page. And it can do like a readability Instapaper version of the web page.
Yeah, it can automatically sort of turn it into a readable view of the page, which is
bonkers.
Yeah, pretty bonkers. Yeah, they're a tough thing to compete with. They've got some magic.
Another thing is you could also print it out on your inkjet printer and tape it into a notebook.
That's funny, because I'm actually probably going to scan my sketch notes and then turn them into vectors to then print them and figure out ways to collage them and stuff, just because that's going to be fun. So, there's paper is still good. I mean, I do... Yeah, there you go. That's the other fallback is just invest in binder clips and put them somewhere.
Yeah. No, I mean, I carry with me. I have my, bag that I take with me whenever I leave the house with more of my capture kits in it. And in it is a Moleskin sketchbook, a pack of cards, and my tablet, right? So there's three different kinds of capture devices depending on what's the right moment, right? You can't replace paper yet. I don't think we ever will.
No, exactly. And I think that's a great way to, great thing to mention at the end of all this. It's not like the technology is the only way or the best way or whatnot. Of course, we're using the heck out of natural media still. Paper is so darn robust. Keep it away from flames and too much water.
Well, in that case, you get yourself a Fisher Space Pen and you get one of those Write in the Rain notebooks, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Right? Sure. Or, exactly. The shower notepads, that kind of stuff, too. you.
Yeah, no, that's what Anne got me for Christmas one year, was a Write in the Rain notebook and a Fisher Space Pen so I can capture ideas in any environment.
Excellent.
That's the kind of woman you marry.
Oh, yes, yes. She set you up for all terrain, no capture.
all terrain comicking. Mm-hmm. I like that. All right. Well, I think walked around this one. You know, before we started recording, I said, hey, I think we could do this an hour in a few minutes. And here we are closing in on 2 hours again. I guess once we get started, right? It just keeps going. But with that said, I hope everybody enjoyed listening to this. I hope everybody got something out of this or at least it was some interesting food for thought as to what your options are out there for organizing your notes and capturing things. Go capture more. And if you enjoyed this discussion, there's two things you could do. You can pick one of them or you do both of them. If you like super awesome is you can go to iTunes. You can give this show a star review. If you're listening to the audio version, say however many stars you think we deserve. You don't have to write a review. You just say, I think this one is 3 stars. I think this one is 4 stars. I personally suggest humbly to you, dear listener, 5 stars or 20 stars. If they'll let you do that. But you could write a review, too, if you think that, you know, we deserve it. Or if you're watching this video on YouTube, you give it a thumbs up. That helps more people find the show. You know, there's probably somebody else out there who's wondering, like, there's got to be a better way to do cloud storage and note-taking. Well, you can point them at this show by just giving the show a thumbs up on YouTube. You don't even have to go to Twitter and say, hey, I watched a thing and it was great, although you could do that, too. Quests. We will be releasing a new quest next episode. And as a teaser for the next episode, we have a guest. We have Steve McCraney of malandchad.com who's going to be coming on to have a discussion with us on sustainable creativity and all that that implies, sustaining creativity and then creating a sustainable career out of creativity. And people can go to doodlealley.com if I'm not mistaken. I'll go to it right now just to make sure. Doodlealley.com. I can pull up the webpage where he has a series of essays on sustainable creativity, which we will be talking about on the show. So Get Stuff Done by Stephen McCraney.
Right? Cool. Yeah, so, that's going to be fun. Going to be excellent, excellent topic to explore.
It's comics essays on being creative. Mm-hmm. So right up my alley. But yeah, so that's next episode where we will also be launching the next quest. So stay tuned for that. Anything that you want to throw in on the end of this one, Rob?
No. And if you've had a chance to take all the quests, that is super cool. Maybe if anyone's like missing a quest, you know, we could always dialogue and just have some playful dialogue about it. Maybe we would do some kind of improvised thing, right? Let's just, if you're really itching for it, kick around some ideas with us on Twitter. But really, the next official quest is coming up later. But we do have, you know, 9 quests. If you haven't had a chance to take them all, just go to leanintoart.com/quests and voila, plenty of fun mini art challenges and some not so mini art challenges for you to tackle.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the more time consumptive ones, if you're looking for a challenge, is I don't remember not that guy. It was one of the quests I issued, and it's,
oh my gosh,
it requires you to watch a He-Man episode and redesign one, I think one of the characters, or multiple characters, if I remember right. Yeah. But you watch an episode of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe from 1984, which everybody knows, I love that show with all my heart, but the character designs weren't always that great. And Lucas, who was in the Q&A tonight, he did a fabulous quest entry on that one, where he was even critiquing the episode itself and found some very incisive, you know, jabs on the writing in the episode, where I was like, when I read it, I was like, yeah, you know, he's right. That part is kind of ragged. But yeah, that one requires you to watch a 20-minute TV show and then do a complete character redesign based on one of the characters in the show and write up why you chose what you chose. But then there's also other ones like a full deck of cards, like Rob's quest where he issued 2-minute challenges. You spend 2 minutes with this card and do a creative activity, and there's a whole mess of them. How many were there? Like 11?
Well, I think 11. So, something like that. It was an odd number. Could have been 13 or 11.
Okay, so yeah. It was between 22 and 26 minutes of like different art challenges to take on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot shorter than the Not That Guy quest. But there's a whole mess of them there at leanintart.com/quests. So, mm-hmm. Did I miss anything?
Are we nah. Done? Yeah. We're done, yeah. So there's quests, there's voting on the podcast, there's, yeah, and, you know, thanks for everyone who hung out with us in the chat room this evening. Always appreciated.
That's right. We'll be back in 2 weeks at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursday, August 7th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I don't know what that is, GMT, but
yeah,
there'll be a Google event for it. Just follow us on Twitter.
November 7th?
Did I say October?
You said August.
Really? Oh my God.
Good luck finding us.
Yeah, really. No. November 7th.
We'll be back in a couple weeks. And that's what we do. So in between time, if you're curious, like, hey, you know, what are you guys up to? There's always the Extra Lean podcast, which I will be doing another issue of our newsletter. You can always find that on the site. It's the big old envelope in the upper right corner. Go to leanintoart.com, click on that, subscribe to the newsletter, and you'll get the inside scoop on all sorts of fun resources and whatnot, and a summary of the latest Leaning to Art podcast, if you miss any, and the Extra Lean podcast. So that's what we do in the every other weeks, and it's just a little special podcast for those that lean in a little further.
Those who want us in their lives every week, you can have.
There you go.
There you go. So, all right, Rob, thank you for this discussion. This was a good one.
And cool. Yeah. Thank you, Jersey.
Thanks, everybody, for downloading, listening, and participating in the live stream. Until next time, everybody, I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of leanintoart.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.